Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
...75% or more of your property taxes are based upon employee salary, benefits, and pension. So if you want to control property taxes over the long haul, you have to control those expenses.
Governor Christie in New Jersey, that's the New Jersey side, and in New York, CSEA union leader Danny Donahue. Breaking news from both sides of the Hudson in the battle to redefine the social contract and the actual contract with public employees. No gay marriage yet, no property tax cap or rent agreement, but a 3-year wage freeze plus a 9-day furlough in New York. More payouts for health care, too. And we're going to ask if this might be a model to avoid teacher layoffs in New York City. New pension and health care costs, an older retirement age for future workers, loss of some collective bargaining rights coming closer in New Jersey, while the millionaire's tax returns to the scene for more debate. The new era of property tax caps and public employee wages and benefits is dawning on both sides of the Hudson and from coast to coast. Is this loud battle over trickle-down pain about set now and the country will move back onto other things? Or is this just round one? Let's look at the local details and then the big picture with WNYC's Bob Henley and Lisa Fleischer, who covers New Jersey for The Wall Street Journal. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Morning.
And excuse me for the voice, and listeners, excuse me for the voice. At least I'm not a state worker who has to suffer a 9-day unpaid furlough and a and all these cuts, loss of collective bargaining, and everything else. But Bob, the New York State Legislature did manage yesterday to declare corn the official state vegetable. I just wanted to make sure you knew that.
And I'm excited.
Is corn even a vegetable? I guess so, technically, but it should really be the official state carb. But I guess that's another show.
Well, these guys can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Lisa, does New Jersey have a state vegetable? Do you know?
Actually, I'm not sure.
Okay. New Jersey listeners, do you have a state vegetable in the Garden State? 212-433.
Isn't it the tomato?
It should be.
Should be the tomato. Post it to
cranberry or something.
WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show or call it in. 212-433-WNYC. So, Bob, seriously, the deal in New York with the union CSEA is the 9,800 layoffs the governor was threatening do not materialize, no layoffs, but a 3-year wage freeze plus 9 days of unpaid furlough over the next 2 years, plus more premiums, more copays, more deductibles on the health plan. Where do you put this on the scale from breathtaking to ho-hum?
I think it's significant because it follows on a similar kind of watershed agreement with Governor Patterson with state workers for pension reform. So I think you see in both instances public employees trying to stay ahead of the curve here. But the big picture is the fact that the federal government is stepping away from returning tax dollars through municipal aid and state aid in a fundamentally dramatic way. And we are really reckoning with it just now. Much of it is fallout from the Wall Street fiasco, and then also what we're seeing now with the conference of mayors nationally asking the president to rethink U.S. commitments to overseas military involvement. So these things have been in play for a while, but we're just starting to feel the economic dislocation right now.
Lisa, the New Jersey Senate passed a plan for sharply higher pension and health insurance payments as well from 500,000 state and local workers. We should make the distinction. The New York agreement is just for one of the state unions. It's the largest, but representing only state workers. This New Jersey bill would be for all state workers and local workers, cops, firefighters, everybody.
And not only that, Brian, but also for people who have already retired are affected by this. And that's why this is particularly significant. I believe that there's actually 720,000 people in the pension system. So, I mean, the thing that affects them is taking away COLAs or suspending them for some unknown period of time. And that's going to be really significant in their sort of lifetime earnings, so to speak.
How will that work, and how much money will that actually mean per individual?
I don't know the per individual stats, but basically what they're doing is they're going to stop paying these cost of living increases until some sort of unspecified date, and that should that's been pushed for a long time by people who are sort of managing the pension fund. And Josh Rao, who's a Northwestern professor, says that basically drops the unfunded liability by like 10% for every percent cost of living increase you take away.
Is there a
now,
certain?
Brian, there's some detail here that might be worthwhile to add in that. It's roughly like 2 to 3%, you know, that they were throwing in there to account for the increase in cost of living, and the general consensus was that we've not seen. Although now you might say that that's not the case because we are seeing gas and food go back up. But the idea was to try to take the automatic nature of this process out. Now, what Senate President Sweeney did get in the compromise was a provision that in the event that they approach some kind of 80% funding and they get on an even keel, that it might be possible to return to that. So it's not a never, but it certainly is for now going to help the state bring down. I mean, keep in mind, the state of New Jersey has over $100 billion unfunded liability when you combine its pension funds, which the state did not pay into over the last 17 years. Only on two occasions under John Corzine did they pay anything in. And then also the unfunded liability, which is all of the retiree health care costs, which are also significant.
And I think Jeff in West Milford, a former police officer, wants to weigh in on this. Jeff, you there? Okay, Jeff's going to have to turn his radio off. And then we'll get to Jeff. Alexis in Red Bank has a nominee for state vegetable. Is that right, Alexis?
Yes. It's my understanding that New Jersey produces the world's most eggplant, more than any other place in the world.
More eggplant, maybe per capita or per acre. Did you know that, Lisa, that New Jersey? I didn't know that. If New Jersey is the eggplant capital of the world.
I feel like I heard that. I'm Googling it, and some, you know, not necessarily reputable site says that New Jersey produces two-thirds of the world's eggplants. So I don't know. I guess
we
can check that.
I think the Secretary of Agriculture on. I think that's the next call.
Our crack research team has uncovered that in 2008 a bill was proposed to make the tomato.
Right.
The state vegetable, which goes well with eggplant. In fact, they can make the tomato sauce and make the eggplant parmesan, which I think is consumed in great quantities in New Jersey. But the bill was never passed on the tomato. Maybe it's because they couldn't come to a bipartisan agreement on whether a tomato is a vegetable or a fruit. But in any case, Lisa, for all of this in New Jersey, Business Week reported that the Senate bill only saves the state $10 million. Not the $300 million-plus that the governor has put in the budget.
Right, and we reported that last week because that came out at a hearing where the treasurer or treasury representative came out and said, well, with the calculation of this all, it'll save $10 million this year. And the reason that that's happened is because in the very beginning, Christie wanted to make Christie's, you know, initial proposal was to force everyone to pay 30% of the premium, and Assembly Speaker Sheila Oliver is particularly strong against that because if you think about it, no matter what your premium is, if you have to pay 30%, the people at the lower end of the wage scale are going to bear the burden more. Like, let's say your premium is $15,000 a year, that's going to be particularly hard for somebody who makes $30,000 a year to shoulder that cost versus somebody who makes $100,000 a year. So the way they did that was they ended up doing a compromise where you pay based sort of on your salary. So, you know, lower wage workers would pay a lower percentage of the premium. And so, and not only that, it also is phased in over a few years. So that's why this year you're not going to see the savings that Christie had originally planned for. And what that does is put a sort of it makes this year's budget more complicated. And they only have 2 weeks to pass it now, and they've been paying so much attention to this pensions and benefits deal that now after today, I think the focus is going to immediately switch to the budget that needs to be passed by the end of the month.
But it's not a done deal yet, I understand, on pensions and health benefits. And Democrats still want to bring back the millionaire's tax, which, of course, Governor Christie, like Governor Cuomo, says he would veto, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to veto it if they pass it. There's no question about that. And the last thing that the pensions and benefits deal needs to do is pass the assembly today, the full assembly, and it's probably going to do that today.
Bob, the furloughs in New York, this is 9 unpaid days for state workers represented by CSEA in New York State. A similar deal may be struck with other state unions. That remains to be seen. But this is apparently the first ever such unpaid furlough in New York State. In our workaholic world, maybe there are a lot of people who would just as soon have 9 more days of time, even if unpaid, but it's kind of being forced down their throats. So it shows, I guess, the extreme nature of the situation. And yet the governor was threatening 9,800 layoffs. And I want to play a clip right now of Danny Donahue, the CSEA union chief. We heard Chris Christie before kind of going on the offensive. This is what we need to do. 75% of property tax payments go to public employee salaries and benefits. So this is the other side, the resignation from the union leader on the other side of the table in New York.
We recognize that no one really wants to go without a salary increase, but we also recognize that we had to do our share to share that so-called pain.
Bob?
Yeah, I think that one of the things, keep in mind for perspective, that the New Jersey millionaire's tax would probably, I think, between $500 and $600 million would be what would be generated by that. What is of concern here is that this 9 days of furlough, if you're someone that is in your $30,000, $35,000 a bracket, this is a real hardship. And what we're starting to see is that this economy, this macro national economy, is in this slowdown. And Bernanke warned yesterday, Federal Reserve Chief, that there is a danger to pull back spending to such a degree in the public sector that you could precipitate another double dip recession. And we do see evidence that as they add a small number of private sector jobs, that ground is being lost, as indeed the municipal, county, and state workers across the country are being laid off.
Right. And if you look at this in real terms, it's being reported as a wage freeze plus a furlough, but it's really a wage cut, a very unusual actual decrease in the pay for these state workers in New York. Wage freeze for 3 years, plus if they work for 50 weeks, let's round it off, and now they're not going to get paid for 2 weeks, that's a 4% pay cut, plus whatever additional cash is being deducted from their paychecks to increase their contribution to the health care fund. It's a real pay cut.
Right, and if you're a single parent with a couple of kids, I interviewed a teacher yesterday who listened to Governor Christie and understood the rationale of what he was saying, but in her threshold, her husband had just been laid off from his job as a truck driver. They have 3 kids, and this may mean they have to leave the state of New Jersey. They went from owning a home to renting. So what you're seeing in the aggregate is kind of a slide, a continued slide of the American middle class with the diminishment of their buying power, which is going to choke off whatever recovery allegedly is occurring.
Well, or it could threaten to diminish the recovery anyway. And, of course, we heard a downward estimate from Ben Bernanke yesterday on the economy for this year and next year. And it's a good question, and we'll ask our next guest whether she thinks it actually has anything to do with the declining fates of public employees. But people want public employees to be brought down to the same levels of benefits as private sector workers get. It seems to be happening around the country. It is certainly happening in New York and New Jersey. WNYC's Bob Henley, Lisa Fleischer, who covers New Jersey for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And for another view, we welcome Esther Fuchs, Barnard and Columbia politics professor, former policy advisor to Mayor Bloomberg, and steeped in all this stuff. She once wrote a book called Mayors and Money. Hi, Esther. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
So let's get the really big picture. We have a range all across America now from, let's say, Wisconsin on one extreme with big cuts and complete loss of collective bargaining rights for public employee benefits, to states like Connecticut on the other extreme, where the budget was balanced with a collection of cuts and layoffs and, yes, tax hikes, too. New Jersey and New York, maybe somewhere in the middle, but maybe leaning kind of right. New Jersey a little more. Is a national reckoning now working itself out?
There's no question that this is a national reckoning, and I think a couple of the points that were made earlier are really worth revisiting now. The issue of what the federal government actually does in relation to its states and cities is very important. The decline in revenue sharing. I mean, we pay taxes at every level of government, but what comes back to basic service delivery to the things that people care about is really a minimum amount. And, you know, 1979, Jimmy Carter was the one who really started to decrease the aid to local governments. And it's been a continuous slide. And as state governments get less money, of course, they give less money to their local governments. So you get this spiraling impact. I mean, something that I think is going to happen within the next year is to see the impact of all these state cuts on local governments much more directly and what they can do with not just their public employee benefits, but actually in delivering basic services. So I think there are two very big things going on here. It's really a failure to focus in this country on domestic policy concerns, which are really primarily the function of local governments and, of course, state governments in some way. And the second thing is the public just really being either misinformed in some ways deliberately by politicians, but also not paying attention to what's been going on over the last 20 years and who is the middle class in this country, which obviously includes public employees. You know, if you start cutting the benefits and the salaries of public employees, it will have an incredible negative effect on the economic recovery, or whatever this economic recovery is supposed to be at this point. Because the thing that struck me in Wisconsin, and we're going to see it in New York, is that effort to peel away public employees from the rest of the working class and middle class of the state. Your taxpayers was the rhetoric, and their, you know, municipal and state employees. Well, it turns out that municipal and state employees are also taxpayers and are also very important to the economy of the nation right now. So I think we're not thinking about any of our domestic policy in a holistic way. Each level of government, because of policies, of course, that happened in the past, are now just taking their problems and dumping it on the next level of government, which is part of the problem of federalism. And I think it's just going to continue to get worse until we start telling the truth about, you know, what do we want from government and do we really want to pay for it and not be willing to sacrifice the future for the present. I think this is unfortunately necessary what's going on now, but I think we're not even close to being honest about what is really going on in state and city budgets relative to what we would like to see government do.
So let me replay the clip of Governor Christie that people have been using all morning and kind of reanalyze it in the context of what you just said. Here's Governor Christie.
75% or more of your property taxes are based upon employee salary, benefits, and pension. So if you want to control property taxes over the long haul, you have to control those expenses.
So he seemed to separate the notion of your property tax money going to pay public employees' wages and benefits from any notion, which went unsaid, of the services that are provided
exactly
back to the public by those employees.
Exactly.
But
that
Esther
is such a pernicious statement the way he did it. I mean, there are reasons to cut benefits. I actually think there are huge problems in the structure of public employee benefits. However, to separate this idea that we're paying workers' benefits and they're not doing anything, we need to know what they're doing. We need to figure out whether we want it, and then we can determine what we want to pay for
and how much. But let me argue his point for just a second. If there is this, bubble in public employee pensions and health care benefits,
right,
if there is this imbalance where we have so much unfunded pension promises,
right,
at every level of government where, you know, employees in the public sector pay so much less for their health care than equivalent employees in the private sector, then one could argue, and you know, it's going in this direction, that cuts and changes could be made to those particular things without affecting services to the public and without being unfair to the public employees.
Well, that the you hit the point at the end, which is the fairness issue. When you make the question is, there was an agreement made with these individuals. What do we owe these individuals? The truth is, you don't want to be in a situation in which you're paying more to retired workers than you are to your existing workforce. I think that's a problem. But what we really haven't done is evaluate what are we getting from public employees? What do we want? Is it worth it? And compare it to the private sector. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But this reminds me, and I have to just give a simple anecdote, because in universities, you know, I think it was Henry Kissinger who said the politics are vicious because the stakes are so low. For years, you know, they've been the fight over salaries and benefits is somewhat similar, even in the private universities. And of course, the presidents would go to the faculty and look at the senior faculty salaries, which in a certain period were increased and their benefits were increased. And they would say, "Oh, look what Professor X is doing. You work so much harder. Why should he be making so much more money than you?" And of course, that was just a way of divide and conquer. My view is, why not bring everybody up if we are worth it? I mean, my issue in the public sector now is the valuation of the work and what we're getting, which is a deeper concern that nobody wants to deal with because it's harder. But the whole idea that because we've failed to provide adequately in the private sector, now the public sector should adopt that model out of some sort of view of fairness is not just regressive, it's kind of ridiculous on some level, because we don't have adequate health care for most people. We've got to figure that out. People need to live on a pension, and they're entitled to a pension if they've worked for that pension, and most people view that as the case. And so we are not dealing with the hard questions of how to balance these issues and still provide services that people want. And what we know is that a lot, the furlough to me is fascinating, because that is really dangerous in a way, because it really indicates that, you know what, if all those people stop working for 9 or 10 days a year, we wouldn't really miss them. That the jobs that they're doing or whatever they're doing can wait or are not that important, or maybe we don't need them. It would be more honest to do an evaluation of what we need. It's like keeping open all of those juvenile centers upstate New York when there are no kids in them.
I guess we're about to find out with these 9 days of furloughs over the next 2 years how much we do miss them. But there's another unresolved piece here. When they debate the millionaire's tax, another way to put that is, where is the pain for the bankers who contributed a lot to this mess? Need it all be trickle-down painonomics? Or do the bankers so have New Jersey and New York and other places over a barrel because, oh, I can move to Pennsylvania, I can move to Florida, that you know, they will not be asked to contribute because they don't get hurt by this?
I mean, there is a real problem about businesses moving if you increase taxes too high. That kind of sort of dysfunctional federalism and the competition that creates from places essentially poaching. By the way, New Jersey's been doing that for the last 20 years with New York, so my sympathy is certainly not with them, I have to say. It's really extraordinary to me that they are not focusing on the tax side of the equation. I don't understand how you do budgets and say, we're not going to look at the tax side. And if you speak to most people in the highest income brackets, which is in this instance, it would be not a large number of people, most believe they could handle that tax increase. And I don't know why one would take that off the table right now.
So I'm curious, Esther. Mayor Bloomberg is one of those holding the line on taxes as something that would ultimately hurt our business climate, and he's pressuring public employees to take concessions. Do you split with your former boss on this?
You know what? I don't split with him on this issue because cities have a different mandate than states. To me, I'm amused by the fact that the Governor Cuomo managed to balance his budget by zero. Part of what he did was zero out New York City on revenue sharing. Every other local government, which the state gives direct cash to local governments from the taxes they collect. So every other locality got a 2% cut in their revenue sharing. They zeroed out New York, and, you know, his argument was, well, Patterson zeroed it out last year, so therefore I didn't do anything, which is laughable at, you know, minimally. So the irony here is that cities like New York, and under Bloomberg, we have actually managed to balance our budgets and be fiscally responsible in a way that almost no other city in the country has done. The reward for that is we're going to make it harder for you. We're going to reduce your federal assistance, your state assistance, and your federal assistance so that you have to find other places to cut your budgets and other places to reduce your services. Mm-hmm. And to me, local governments are more important than state governments. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's where cities get, that's where people get primarily the services that they care about.
So as we run out of time, there's an editorial, lead editorial in the Daily News today, which it endorses, not only endorses the Cuomo deal with the union, but says it should be seen as a model for the city. And it says, if city workers contributed what state workers pay now, 10% for individual health coverage, 25% for families, I guess that's under the New Deal, the Citizens Budget Commission calculates the city would save $600 million, more than enough to avert the layoffs. That's the way to go. So are we going to look at something like this in, you know, between now and June 30th, the end of the city's fiscal year, that's going to change the benefits and avoid the teacher layoffs that everybody's talking about at the city level?
I mean, I think it's no secret that that is what most of the city negotiators, including the mayor, would like to see now, some combination of that to avert the layoffs. I know he wants to avert teacher layoffs, but he cannot print money. Only federal government can print money. So, and the city is obligated legally to balance its budget. And so, you know, the irony here is the state government, I have a lot of respect for Andrew Cuomo because he's trying to bring things under control. But we've had, you know, 25, 30 years of profligacy at the state level, of irresponsible government, of nobody knowing what was going on and where the money was going, and spending in a way that had no relationship to anybody evaluating what we were getting for it. So I understand the difficulty of this, but the reality is that the local governments, the city governments, are the ones who end up having to pay for this at the end of the day. And this is where we, as taxpayers, depend upon for services. Police, fire, sanitation, education, these are all local government functions. And, you know, we need to get the resources to provide these things so we can live in this in a healthy and safe climate in our city. And it's the same challenge all across the United States now. And I think this is part of my disappointment in the national debate. Nobody's recognizing that domestic policy means focusing on, you know, what the public wants and needs, and it's provided at the local level.
Esther Fuchs teaches politics at Columbia, a former advisor to Mayor Bloomberg. Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come in a minute. Food prices spike. There were food riots around the world over the last couple of years, and now the G20 nations are trying to do something about it, or are they? And then we'll continue our New Little series. Today, the New Little Ecuador in Corona, Queens, and the New Little Tibet in Sunnyside. Stay tuned.